Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Speaking with us from the UK this evening is Paul Cooklin, highly accomplished photographer, recognized for his refined signature style. Paul originally began as a digital artist, creating abstract and conceptual images, but discovered a passion for analog photography in the process of developing black and white film. Paul's portfolio consists of an eclectic collection of prints spanning various photographic genres, which have featured in numerous publications, including Time Magazine, Italian Vogue, and National Geographic. Paul's assignment in Cuba for Time Magazine led to the collection of his artwork in his engaging book publication, Cuba on Film. He is represented by the 508 Kings Road Art Gallery in Chelsea, London, and Saatchi Online Gallery, and more. Paul's photography has been shown in the prestigious 5th Annual Exposure Award, viewed at the Louvre Museum in Paris in the Black and White Collection. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you. I feel honored to be here, really.
Thank you. You're highly acclaimed as a master of analog photography with an intuitive eye for capturing stories of the moment in dynamic compositions and building an extensive portfolio. What drew you into photography?
I suppose when I was doing the digital art thing and I was working with a company at the time called Brand X Pictures, who are now taken over by Getty Images, I was literally just creating stuff from scratch, you know, all sorts of abstract stuff. And then I was using a digital camera to try to create abstract shapes, which I would then layer up and do all sorts of things with. And I just wondered at the time if I could actually just go out and take a shot and it would be quite good. But I realized quite soon that there needed to be a lot of post-processing and, you know, all sorts of bits and pieces that needed to be done to make it like a finished image. And I thought, you know, I've done that. That's not really what I want to do. And am I able just to be able to go out and shoot and be happy with the shot? And at the time, my dad gave me the Bronica ETRS medium format camera and some film. And I just tried it. You know, at the time, I had a young kid and I just went out and shot some of my kid and some outside. Sent off the negs and they came back and mostly were out of focus, not particularly great. But I liked the look of film. I liked the process. It was much slower. I didn't want to alter anything afterwards. I just knew that if I wanted to create a picture that I liked, then I would have to try harder the other end of the camera, and I didn't want to do any post-processing or anything like that. And that's kind of how I started it. And then I bought some more film, and I went out again, and I learned from that, and I then had an image in my mind, if you like, of what it's like to shoot with film, and that specific film brand, and on that particular camera with that lens, you end up building up a database in your mind of, you know, how that looks. And then it slowly started to improve. It's an endless pursuit of a perfection, which I will never, ever accomplish. But, you know, I keep trying it. Just one of those endless things, really, you know, that you're always waiting for the next shot, and then you perhaps get some pictures back and you like them. Oh, you know, that one's great for the day. And then you think, oh, actually, I could probably do that better. And, you know, maybe there's this, and you walk around the corner and then there's another shot. And it's an alluring hobby stroke job, which I'm just out there just trying to do, really.
You've also made it your business to market your work through a variety of channels. And what avenues have you explored? And can you tell us about some of the assignments this has led to?
Initially, I signed all sorts of really poor contracts and stuff, and because I didn't really understand, you know, how it all worked, and the business of actually selling prints is very different to going out and taking photos. In fact, it's probably the same as any business. You know, I've always said I could be selling pencils or I happen to be selling prints. So from that point of view, there's certain hats that you have to don and various hoops that you have to jump through. But I've tried a lot of different platforms and spoken to lots of different people, and some have worked and some haven't. Probably the best one has been the Saatchi Art Online. That's where most people, and I think probably yourself, found my work. There was one that led to, I got called by the editor she was then of Time, and she wanted to buy an image of mine, and I, you know, obviously really, really chuffed that she'd even found it, and we agreed a price, and that was great. And whilst we were on the phone, she said to me, oh, you know, do you have any other images of Latin America? Or, and I said, I don't. And as like a little cheeky pun, I said, well, but if you would like to fly me out to Cuba, I would be happy to do it. And she said, really? And I said, well, yeah, you know, why wouldn't I? So she said, well, look, can you just hold on for like a few minutes? And I went, sure, yeah. So anyway, she came back and she said, all right, then you've been given a go. And I literally couldn't believe it. And it actually wasn't for Time. It was for a sister magazine that she also worked for too. I actually thought this is a great opportunity. And I know that my wife really wanted to go to Cuba too. And I had a young son and an even younger daughter. So we all went, and it was a fantastic opportunity. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's a lovely, lovely place. Obviously, there's some issues over there between yourselves now, but it's just a fantastic experience, and I felt very fortunate to have been asked to go. And I think that quite a lot of the pictures are still quite popular now still, so that's been nice.
Afterwards, you decided to publish a book of your work, Cuba on Film. Can you elaborate on this publication?
In fact, it wasn't my idea. I was asked to do some work with a company called City Pulse by a guy called George Lever in Spain, and I liked him. Although I've never met him, but through email and stuff, you can just get an idea of people. And he had seen my work and said, could we possibly do a book? And of course, I said, yeah, you know, please do. So over the next, I don't know how many months it was, maybe 6 or 9 months, we chose the images. It was obviously going to be a pictorial book. I didn't want to really put down any words. That's not my way. I think if you have to explain it, either you're not seeing it or I've got to try harder. And then the book was published. In fact, it's on my desk now.
Can you tell us how your experience in new cultures or landscapes might inform your work?
I like to travel. Europe's been great. We go to France every year. We try and schedule in for my wife and I to go to at least one city in Europe every year, which I put down as a work trip because it is. In fact, the one we went to Prague, we averaged about 17K a day, which is a lot of walking. All the different cultures, you know, all the different architecture and the smells and the people and the food and the booze. It's all very evocative and emotionally driven and stirring and all those kind of things. And I would do it more if I could. It would be nice to think that at some point that someone might say, look, you know, we want to pay you to go here and, you know, can you go off and shoot? But these trips, they are expensive and they have to be justified. There has to be prints that are then sold because ultimately it is a business. It's not just a hobby. But no, I love to travel. In fact, I would like to come to the States at one point and North America as well. I've got some of my family friends over in the States. So yes, you know, there's loads of countries that I haven't been to, which I'd really like to go to, including India. I've not been there. That'll be probably a big one. Done quite a lot of Southeast Asia. I lived in Hong Kong for 8 years. I've traveled most of Asia. I've done quite a lot of Europe. And I think it's also educational, not just from like a photographic point of view. If we can, we try to take the kids, because apart from going to school and everything else, but there's a wider world out there. And I think that travel is part of their education and it should be explored.
What would you say is involved in submitting your works for stock photos, for example, to Saatchi online or Getty Images, and how are artists compensated?
Well, that's a contentious issue with me. With like Saatchi Art, they're great. Their support staff are great. They don't edit any images that you put up. They accept it, and then it's down to you. But with the stock agencies, obviously they're looking for trends and themes and stuff. And when the company that I mentioned, First Brand X Pictures, I liked the editor that I was working with, and she was very friendly, and we'd have phone calls, and it was all very, it would help me along, and you know, that kind of thing. And I thought at the time that the stock image agency was brilliant. I could earn a living from it. I didn't have to do anything else. In fact, coincided with the digital movement, and then everyone could take a picture and everyone jumped on the bandwagon, and then you got iStock and all those dollar or whatever they charge, you know, for like an image, and it kind of killed it for me. That was my own experience. Perhaps I didn't evolve with it as much and I didn't broaden myself, but which means that's on me. I just found you had to jump over so many more hoops and you would get paid much less. I mean, it still sort of irks me that they would take 80%. That just seems wrong. And all of the justification of, well, we've got marketing and we're the... No, you're just a big, massive company and you know that you can do this. That really stings. I don't submit any images now to stock. I just think it's a waste of my time and it's not really my bend anyway now. I tend to much prefer the sort of art side of it. I've got much further views on it.
What about some of the collectives in London? There's a couple there, and they can take your work and find ways to exhibit it where they're not charging you the exorbitant commissions.
For stock, not as far as I'm aware, is that it's not really, I know what my kind of like niche is, if you like, and mm-hmm. I like the haphazard, lucky, sort of accidental timing kind of work. I don't know whether you've read, but I'm a big fan, or I was a big fan, I should say, of the late Henri Cartier-Bresson, who coined the saying, the decisive moment. And I think that that is what I kind of like, you know, if you can sort of see an image that only works just then at that point, you know, with all different angles and stuff, and someone's in the picture perhaps or not.
You can definitely see elements of his work in some of your photographs.
Oh, bless you. That's such a compliment. And I've only got him to thank for that, really. And also to a nice bloke. If you've ever listened to him in, you know, like interviews, and that's so down to earth. Just not anything that I thought that he might have been given his pictures. Although can look at them and think, oh, he's probably got quite a good sense of humor. Well, that's quite witty. Yeah, no, he is my hero.
Are there any other series that you'd like to talk about that you found most exciting you've done, or something in the works that you'd like to share coming up?
There's nothing planned other than that I've got a couple more trips. I've got one going to France again in August, which I always enjoy because I love going to France. That's always a pleasure. And then I think we're off to Spain in November at some time. That'll be like another photographic shoot. And, you know, again, that's always nice. Actually, at the moment, just editing the images from the trip to Prague, which I've just been to, that was lovely. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's a very fantastic city. It's got all sorts going on there and very photogenic.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and insight with us tonight. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much, and that's very, very kind of you.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. With us this evening is Carol Phillips, Executive Director of the Winnipeg Arts Council, Incorporated, a not-for-profit corporation with charitable status charged by the City of Winnipeg to distribute funding to arts organizations and artists, to manage the city's public art policy, and to champion development of the arts for the people of Winnipeg, building the city's reputation as a city of the arts both nationally and internationally. Carol has had a long career as a successful arts administrator. She was previously the director of Plug-In Institute of Contemporary Art in Winnipeg, where she positioned the ICA for program and facility expansion and oversaw management of Canada's representation to the 2001 Venice Biennale. As Vice President and Director of the Banff Centre for the Arts, she was responsible for maintaining the Centre's international reputation as a leader in the professional development and advanced training of artists from Canada and around the world. Carol has made the creation of Aboriginal arts programs a priority in each institution with which she has been associated. Before this, she directed the Winnipeg Art Gallery and the Norman Mackenzie Art Gallery in Regina. Carol has been jurist and advisor for arts boards, councils, and cultural agencies across Canada and internationally. She was chair of the Submission for Culture and the World Decade for Cultural Development, Canadian Commissions for UNESCO, and has represented Canada at many UNESCO international gatherings and was awarded the Queen's Jubilee Medal in 2002. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Susan. Thank you for such a generous introduction.
The Winnipeg Arts Council offers invaluable opportunities for people in the arts and for enriching our city's cultural heritage and community. Can you elaborate on the role the council plays and share some examples of projects and events?
Of course, I'd like to do that very much. As you have described, the Winnipeg Arts Council is an arm's-length organization. We have a board of directors, and we serve the city by distributing municipally funded grants to artists and arts organizations, by creating public events, of which we try very hard to make sure that they are all at no cost to anyone who would like to participate. And, of course, we also manage the public art program for the city of Winnipeg. This city, unlike some others, doesn't have what you could term a cultural affairs department where all of these sorts of things might be managed and delivered to the people that live here. It has chosen instead to delegate responsibilities to the Winnipeg Arts Council and fund all of these activities through us. We are very fortunate that we can manage all of these programs independently. Of course, we report to the city, and we value the partnership that we have with the city. It's integral to our work, and we couldn't survive without it. But at the same time, it means that we can take some risks and deliver programs that are really responsive and will, in many ways, innovative and things that you haven't really seen before. Winnipeg is one of the few cities, there's a couple others in the country, that have an individual artist grants program, which of course we've created. So it's very, very valuable, and it means that often artists who are emerging or for the first time seeking out a grant, they have a body of work that can support a request, and they have a project in mind for what they'd like to do. So they can come to us and receive a grant, often long before they can be seriously considered at the other government funding agencies at provincial or federal level. So we think that's a really valuable contribution that we make to artists in Winnipeg. And of course, artists with full professional practices can come to us to every few years to get a bit of support for ideas that they have and things that they'd like to create. And this, of course, is in all disciplines. We fund all of the disciplines, music, visual arts, literary arts, and performance. We certainly cover a wide range of activities. Our grants program is probably the most significant for artists and arts organizations in the city because we can make a real investment. The city of Winnipeg funds us to approximately $4.6 million for our grants and events and projects. So we invest almost $4 million a year in the arts in this city, directly into the hands of organizations and artists. And with the organizations, it's from the very largest, the Symphony, the Ballet, Manitoba Theatre Centre, PTE, all of the very large, to the smallest. And here again, we can support small arts organizations, some that are just starting out, some that just do one project a year, or perhaps they just do a fringe performance or an occasional project, and again, may not have eligibility at the other funders. We can help them out. So I think that the Winnipeg Arts Council and the programs it manages on behalf of the city of Winnipeg are really critically important to engendering art in this city and being a continual support.
And how do you advise those in the arts to apply for these opportunities?
Well, certainly things go both ways. Our program manager is always responding to inquiries and welcomes that because it means that a potential applicant can be walked through the process so that they know what it means to fulfill the criteria and what they should submit. It's not all that onerous, but there does have to be something for the assessors to review because all our grants distribution is determined by panels of assessors, or juries, if you like, that are made up of artists and arts workers in the community who know what they're looking at, know what to expect, and they advise on the distribution of and awarding of grants. And that's how the system works. We want to make sure that anybody who is interested in finding out about this, our website is extremely detailed and has all the information there, but sometimes that's a lot to wade through. So just give us a call and we're happy to meet with you and walk you through the process, and hopefully a young artist or someone who has never done this before will find a way to be successful.
And the Winnipeg Arts Council has an impressive public art program that incorporates the art that these artists and other artists would submit and work on. Would you like to share a few highlights of this program?
Well, the public art program is a whole other branch of activity for us, and a huge one because in many ways it's had the most visible impact upon the city. Public art in the public realm really identifies the character of a city. We have major commissions that are sprinkled throughout the city, not surprising many in the downtown area because all of our work has to take place on city-owned property. And commissions like that, for example, four new works that are at Air Canada Park, right there on Portage, across the street there from Portage Place, are something that just opened last year. And those are four new works by contemporary Indigenous artists. And we commissioned those. We had funding that we put away carefully over a couple of years from the city. And we were also successful with a Canada 150 grant from Canadian Heritage, which we could put to that purpose. And we're able to transform that particular block. The park itself still needs some work, but it's thrilling to see four new works by Indigenous artists that are really prominent across the country and see that kind of work here in Winnipeg. June is very close, and the 100th anniversary of the 1919 strike, of course, June 21st is the exact day, and we will be opening new work, monumental piece, right at the corner of Main and Market, where the Pantages Theater is. The plaza will be transformed. There's a very famous photograph by L.B. Foote, which is the tipping of the streetcar, and the piece will be based on that photograph with the streetcar kind of rising up out of the paved surface, and it'll be softly illuminated from the interior, and I think this is going to be a new iconic piece for Winnipeg. So we're in the final throes of seeing that piece in fabrication, but you know, go to Millennium Park and the fountain, the mist and light fountain there that's in the shape of the flask, it's called Empty Full, and then the fence around it that has pieces of poetry and text and quotations from sourced out of the library etched into the steel that wraps around the back end of the plaza there. From one end of the city to the other, we are really trying to mark Winnipeg with interesting and even controversial work that will exact response and start conversations. There's just so many pieces now that I can't list them all, but there again, the famous website, we have everything there. Our public art gallery is on the website, and we have tours. Actually, the summer tour season is going to be starting up very soon, and anybody who wants to, free of charge, can sign up for a tour. We have bike tours and bus tours and walking tours and in all the four corners of the city. So that's a fun way to spend an evening or even noon, take a break from work. Also in the public art program, we do a couple of other things. I mean, that's expected, the big commissions that are obvious and really capture your attention. But we have a program called With Art, and what we do there, it's under the banner of public art, but in that program, we match up an artist with a community. It can be any kind of a community, young people, or any kind of self-identified community, and the artist works with that community in order to go through a creative process, and it's just amazing, the results. So in a program like that, it's not about permanency. It's about the creative process and giving voice, perhaps to those who ordinarily wouldn't be speaking through any kind of artistic activity. So there's just so much that is going on. We have also placed artists in City of Winnipeg departments, you know, over a period of time, 6 months or a year. The artist works in that city department, and they are inspired to create something that somehow reflects on their experience, whether it be, you know, it could be in public works somewhere, it could be in the planning department. We had a wonderful one in the St. Boniface Museum. She created a lovely work of projection and sound. Cheryl Fellows, it was marvelous. That's the kind of thing that can happen. Public art always doesn't have to result in concrete or steel. It can be a much more ephemeral experience as long as it engages with people in an open way.
Well, it's very innovative and very different from what you expect.
Yeah, it is. It is, isn't it? And, well, you know, in 2016, I really have to take the opportunity to say this. There's an organization called the Creative City Network, which is made up of municipalities across Canada. And they, of course, gather and confer and do all of the things that you might expect. But in 2016, they launched an award for best public art program in the country. And Winnipeg won it the first year that it was awarded, so we're kind of proud of that. I think it demonstrates, just as you said, the innovation that this program really has created.
Do you have any new programs coming up that you're working on?
Well, as I say, there's always something in the works, as we say, when it comes to public art. For the first time, the city included public art in the actual capital budget for construction of a project. So with the Southwest Rapid Transitway, we are creating an artwork for each of the 7 transit stops. Those are begun. The artists have begun to work on those. And when the transitway is completed, I think 2020, then the public artworks will also be completed. And they're varied and they're fantastic. There's Indigenous artists. There's so much variation there. It's going to be an interesting experience to ride the bus all the way through. That's for sure. Also, we're starting a new piece at Waverly with the new construction there. There's going to be a work that embodies light that is created right there at the Waverly Underpass. And then, of course, there are the other side of our activity, which I briefly mentioned, in the area of events creation. You know, in 2010, the Winnipeg Arts Council applied for Winnipeg to be named Cultural Capital of Canada, and surprise. We shouldn't have been surprised, but we did win. So we had a couple of years of really wonderful programming with additional funds that ordinarily we don't have and haven't had since. That was a great 2 years, I'll tell you. And at that time, we really began a program of events creation. And what we are trying to continue that to the level that we are able, you know, I mean, not without all that supplementary funding, but nevertheless, continuing. And we've become deeply involved in Nuit Blanche and are the producing partner with Culture Days. And it's working out so well because I don't know if you noticed the new work that was brought in last year, the seesaws that were in the park. They were illuminated seesaws and also had sound incorporated into them. So whenever anybody rode on the seesaws, they played music of sorts. And of course, the lights went up and down. And it was a huge hit. And we're going to do something equally spectacular this year, right in the middle of the exchange. And we want to make Nuit Blanche an absolutely wonderful day, evening, night for contemporary art. And like last year, there were 25,000, 30,000 people on the streets of Winnipeg, and it was a beautiful evening. Everybody was just enjoying themselves so much. So we'll be doing that again the end of September. This year is the first Poet Laureate for Winnipeg. We decided to start a Poet Laureate program, and there are many in this country and around the world, and there have been for a long, long time, and Winnipeg just didn't have one, and there was no answer as to why Winnipeg shouldn't, so we decided to launch it last year, and Di Brandt is the first Poet Laureate, and actually, she will be reading her poetry at City Council for the first time, so we're kind of happy about that, and she's done a lot of programming throughout the city. We've, of course, supported her in that. In March, we had a wonderful event at McNally Robinson, Poetry in Many Languages, where it's the most amazing experience. You think that poetry delivered in a language that you don't understand would be a wonderful, wonderful emotional experience, that even though you don't understand the language itself, when someone is up there reading a poem that they feel passionate about, it really doesn't need translation. So that was a wonderful evening, and we expect many more events like that. One thing that we want to see happen later this year, providing we can have the resources to do this, is a poetry in public places. And what we're going to do is create bus wraps with poetry from Winnipeg poets and let those chug away throughout the city and take poetry to every neighborhood. It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be really well received by the public.
Well, it sounds fascinating. And I'd like to thank you so much for sharing your insight and telling us all about these amazing programs. And I wish you continued success.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Susan, for the opportunity to talk about this, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That was Carol Phillips, Executive Director of the Winnipeg Arts Council. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.